south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start with an email. People are getting really pissed off up in the States, and they want to get the hell out of Dodge. They're getting fed up with the craziness, the chaos, the LGBT, WTF stuff. The social justice warriors, the malignant politicians, the cost of living, the taxes, the IRS, and on and on. But you knew that already, and that's why you're listening to this show, and why you got that plan B on your mind, right? So let's dive into this email from Anonymous. Johnny, I hope this finds you and yours in good health and spirits. I have a question for you. I heard you mention on your show of the dearth of event planners and apartment visiting cat dog sitters, etc. I have mentioned both of these possible job opportunities to friends and family who respond in the usual way. Of course, I'm up in the States now. They keep mentioning a dearth in the market for either, like there just aren't enough people down there, that meaning Latin America, who can afford either service. Then I always mention the fact that capital cities have their embassies, and the cities have wealthy suburbs, etc., etc. So, Johnny, what do you think? Now, you can mention me as a repeat offender to your expat insider seminars, as you call us, but don't mention my name or my state. Just tell your listeners I'm a repeat offender from the Rust Belt. All right, me, Johnny, here again. Now, there's two parts to this letter. I mentioned before, people are fed up, they want to get the hell out of Dodge, and that's the second part of this email. We'll get to that, but let's first talk about event planners, house and apartment sitters, and cat and dog walkers and such. As if you could actually walk a cat. I don't think so. Well, I can tell you this. When I'm in a big city, in a decent area, high-end area, where there are some subdivisions with some fairly wealthy people, a day doesn't go by where I don't see some guy or gal walking down the street holding the leash of some four, even five or six little rat-like dogs. You know, the gussied-up little spoiled mutts with ribbons for collars and knitted booties and sweaters. You know the type. Like, it's so difficult to tell who owns those things. Obsessed, over-the-top dog owners with dough. Now, the truth is, when I am in nice neighborhoods and I see these things, it's always Latinos or Latinas walking the dog. And that's certainly because there are no gringos or expats in the area to fill that position. Though gringos and expats, if they did the right marketing, could surely make a go of it. Because within the gringo communities, they're already doing that. You see it all the time. They set up these gringo fakebook groups, where not a single member seems to be able to speak fluent Spanish. It seems to be a pure gringo thing. And that's how they end up buying, selling, and bartering things like cars, microwaves, bikes, TVs, phones, sex toys, crack pipes, coffee enema equipment. Well, maybe not coffee enema equipment, but you never know. Though there's buying and selling of just about everything, including services. You name it, wherever there are gringos around, there are these Facebook gringo and expat groups blabbering all the time. For example, if you're on one of those things, you could chime in with a question anytime, and someone's bound to answer it. May not be the right answer, but you'll get answers. Like, for example, someone's looking to ride share if anyone's going to the border to renew their 90-day visa. Then there's always people asking if you're up in the States on your way down, if you could bring some particular item back for them. And if you check it out, you'll find gringos are always popping back to the States for this and that. And you'll see them online with those Facebook groups. Always on the lookout for good, reliable, well-credentialed gringos and gringas to house-sit or take care of the dogs or cats. So I'd like to point out to our repeat offender, your friends and family up in the States who've probably never been to Latin America before are dead wrong in their assumptions. There is a nice, solid market for dog walkers, house-sitters, etc. In fact, over the years, I've had need of a few house and dog sitters myself. Because there are situations, especially when you're away for months at a time, when you don't really want your maintenance guy or cleaning lady to be living at your house. Let's put it this way. I could tell you stories, and I probably will, so stay tuned. Of course, the key is to find someone utterly reliable and trustworthy. That means people will need, want, and request references. And that's why gringos and expats are perfect for the job. Because gringos and expats can and do come up with references, whereas Latinos looking to fill that spot can never really precisely prove what their job and work history is and whether or not they're totally honest and reliable. Because even if someone presents with a stack of great references, as you heard me mention in a past show, when employers here in Latin America have a bad employee, like someone who steals from you, they'll often still get a glowing reference from the boss or boss lady as they get the boot. In fact, and this has happened to me, a couple of weeks after you fired someone, they come back and ask for a job reference, as if it was a nice, amicable parting of ways. In fact, the amazing thing to me, and I found this out a long time ago, employees have no shame or what they call vergüenza, which translates to embarrassment. That is, if you catch them sleeping on the job or stealing red-handed. They'll calmly accept that it's a fireable offense. But they're likely in the same breath to ask you for a reference or recommendation. That's happened to me a number of times. I even had one maintenance guy who offered his son up for the job after I fired him for going up on the roof and falling asleep. Of course, I tell him to shove it where the coffee enema goes. Meanwhile, your average Latino or Latina employer will gladly give him a reference just to get him out of their hair. Which is why every single cleaning lady or maintenance guy who's knocked on my front door looking for a job has been able to produce two or three letters of recommendation, even more. You have to wonder why. And sometimes those references can really be glowing, and if you don't speak Spanish, you're not going to be able to call them up for verification. Chances are, even if you do get through with a phone call, an ex-boss is not likely to say bad things about his employee to you over the phone. So you have to ask yourself, when someone presents themselves at your front door with four or five different letters of recommendation from four or five different jobs, why in the hell are they looking for a job if they're such a stellar employee? So the point is, gringos and expats have a huge advantage when it comes to house-sitting or cat or dog walking, whatever, because we can provide our references and a real history. 9 times out of 10, probably 99 times out of 100, you won't find gringos and expats in Latin America to be devious, underhanded, or bad people. They're down here on an adventure to look around, explore, and learn. They're out learning their Spanish, maybe trying to dig up some business ideas, etc., etc. Now, if you want my opinion, you don't find cold-hearted psychopaths, even bad boy or girl sociopathic dickheads, backpacking or just hanging out in Latin America. The fact is, most of them are just looking to scrape together a few bucks so they can stay on a bit longer and enjoy the great weather and see some more great sights. A noble objective. Now, when it comes to house-sitting, dog-walking, or taking care of pets, for my money, I'd pick a gringo or gringa every time. Not that I don't trust Latinos in general. It's just that, well, most of them have different standards than we have. For instance, that mañana time thing. And to point out a good example why that can be sometimes infuriating, suppose you're in Managua, Nicaragua, and you're planning a nice trip to Panama by car. You planned it all out so you can do all your driving during the day, and if you take off at 8 in the morning, you'll make it there by 5 at night. So you've prearranged for the house sitter to come by at 7:30, pick up the keys, get the instructions, and then you're off. Well, chances are, if your house sitter is Latino or Latina, you could probably plan on him or her showing up at 8:30. And if they live a ways away, add another half hour. Far away, an hour. Are you starting to see what I mean? Now, if you hire a gringo or gringa for that job, barring catastrophe, they'll be there on time. However, as my 100% German mother always says, if you're on time, you're late. All right, let's get back to these local fake book expat groups. Now, you know my opinion about fake book and Mark Zuckerturd. I absolutely can't stand looking at that guy. He's got the kind of face that's just begging to get slapped. But then again, so do Bill, Hillary, Ovamit, Soros, Maxine Waters, Burnt Bernie, and occasional Cortex. And of course, the Bush clan. Oh, and let's not forget Bill Gates. He's got that kind of a kisser. I know. There's a huge list of despicable people at the top, and that's why they have bodyguards. Though, isn't it funny? They're all anti-gun, but all their bodyguards have guns. And that's reason 2,647 why you really have to get out of Dodge as fast as you can. Truth is, I don't see how anyone could live up in the States anymore. It's a land where everyone at the top really is a celebrity sociopath. And though every one of those aforementioned slime balls does need a good slap in the face, I for one will exercise a little bit of restraint and let someone else have the fun of decking one or more of those creeps. Not that anyone will ever get close enough to do it, especially considering that their bodyguards are all gunned up. So, in lieu of slapping or decking a celebrity dung beetle and dirtying up your hand or fist, my suggestion, as it's always been, get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. Get that Plan B in gear, which brings us to the second half of this email. Starts out, Johnny, If you think it's horrible up here in the good old USA, you are correct. From the possibility of being victimized by being in a gun massacre, to the addition of some needed but also some very horrible developments in my workplace, things are about to get very interesting. Sort of like it's gone all carrot and no stick anymore where I work, so to speak. To be clear, I never advocate violence against others, only proper and justified response according to the law. But the stick, however one characterizes it, is something that helps develop structure in people's lives. By creating limits for others through penalties and repercussions to themselves, whatever those may be, we create a better person, one with more self-control, perhaps. Accordingly, that's one of my reasons to get the hell out of Dodge. And she uses the F word there. I don't blame her. All right, then, she says. You could say, Johnny, perhaps if a hardened corrections officer sees a definite need to get out of Dodge, what the hell is everyone else waiting for? As always, kind regards to all and keep on keeping on, Johnny. Sincerely, an anonymous expat insider, repeat offender. Well, there you have it from someone on the inside. You heard the email. A corrections officer wants to get the hell out of Dodge right now. And you know, in a way, I don't feel at all sorry for people who don't have a plan B or aren't even thinking of having one, because those are the kind of non-thinking slugs who I don't want to be neighbors with. I'm sorry. I'm not saying they deserve to go down with the Titanic, but it's just the fact their brains are not firing on all cylinders. It's not as though people don't see bad things are coming. Seems like every single man on the street pull, whether it's New York, Middle America, or way down south, everyone is seeing bad stuff is happening. Things are getting worse, and the U.S. and all the first world, basically, is going right down the toilet. The only people that don't seem to be worried are bureaucrats, the entrenched political class, and entitled children of the wealthy. Because, you know, mommy and daddy will always take care of them, right? So then the next question is, how's your plan B coming? And you know, the best way to get your plan B on steroids is to come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. The next one is January 2020. Goes from Friday night the 10th to Thursday night the 16th. We'll be in two countries, Guatemala and El Salvador. It's set up that way, so you'll get to experience the perfect weather in the Altiplano, which is 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level, and you'll get to see and check out for yourself the Pacific beaches as well. People tell me over and over again, that is previous seminar attendees, that it gave them a 2 to 5 year head start on their plan B, because after all, for that entire week, I do make you a drink from the fire hose. So to join me and my little group on our next adventure, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you all the info. That's theexpatfiles, all one word, @gmail.com. And for those of you who think, well, it's expensive, maybe it's not worth it, I'd like you to consider the fact that with every single expat seminar I've ever had, and this will be number 18, I've had repeat offenders, most often multiple repeat offenders. That should give you an idea of the value of the seminar. That says it all. So mark your calendar for January 10th through 16th. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send off all the information. Speaking of questions and emails, I do get emails from people now and again saying, Johnny, you never talk about Bolivia. What about Bolivia? Is it a good place for your plan B? You know, it's a funny thing. In my something like 30 years of traveling through Latin America, I don't meet many people at all who've ever been to Bolivia. It really is way off the tourist trail. Of course, I've been there, but I don't recommend living there permanently. Well, for traveling and visiting, it's okay, but I wouldn't want to live there. And it happens that just a day or two ago, a nice little article came out that encapsulates why I have that opinion about Bolivia. So, as usual, I'll paraphrase this a bit and cut out the boring parts. Nothing worse than a boring radio show or podcast, huh? That, dead air, and rap and reggaeton videos are the kiss of death. That's my short list anyway. So let me give you some snippets about what has been going down in Bolivia over the past decade or so. Meaning, you'll soon find out why I don't recommend it as a Plan B destination. All right, the article begins. Walk into any tourist shop in Bolivia, and alongside postcards of colonial cathedrals and mist over a moonlit desert, and you will see him, Evo Morales, with his jet black hair and brightly embroidered indigenous jackets and ponchos. He has ruled the landlocked nation of Bolivia for so long that for many, it's almost inconceivable there was any other president, and almost no one can name a president before him. The reality is the 59-year-old former coca farmer, which is the basis of cocaine, it's legal there, by the way, who has been in power since 2006, is facing opposition of the type he's never had before. Then it says, discontent over Evo Morales' audacious bid for a fourth consecutive term has spilled into the streets with protests, government buildings being set afire, and national strikes. Doesn't that sound a lot like Ecuador and Nicaragua right now? So as far as that fourth term for presidency he's seeking, the controversy centers on his response to the 2016 referendum, which voters rejected him changing the Constitution to remove presidential term limits that was supposed to effectively bar him from seeking another term. Well, he lost that battle with the voters, but guess what? He then went to the country's highest court, the Supreme Court, claiming that preventing him from running again and again and again violate his human rights. Haven't we heard that one before? Which begs the question, doesn't any kind of limit on any kind of human activity violate your human rights? I mean, hey, if you want to hang glide into an active bubbling volcano and the cops stop you, you could claim that too was a violation of your human rights. Again with the human rights, everything's a human right. Anyway, in the case of Bolivia and the term limits, the Supreme Court overturned the referendum result in Morales' favor. An unprecedented move. But just to let you know, in those 13 years Morales has been in office, he's appointed quite a few of the judges on the Supreme Court. That's how things work here in Latin America. And why, no matter how corrupt the president and his cronies might be, when caught ass deep in the cookie jar, they still rarely get prosecuted and make it to court. And if they do, the court is usually stacked with judges that he and his cronies appointed. I've seen it happen in many Latin countries. Guilty of sin politicians go to court, but they almost never get nailed by the judicial system. That is, unless some official judicial outsiders come in without an axe to grind, or they get extradited to another country where they've committed a crime. Which is a rarity, but it did happen in Guatemala, you know. But only after being tried in their own country and being found not guilty. Surprise, surprise, what do you expect? Let's face it, if you appoint a judge and if down the line you end up facing criminal charges with him at the bench, you think he's going to bite the hand that gave him that government gravy train job? Now, back in Bolivia, Evo Morales has always enjoyed a lot of support because he's credited with bringing political and economic stability to the country, which had five presidents in 5 years before he came to power in 2006. Imagine that, five presidents in 5 years. Still, Bolivia remains the poorest country in South America. However, the strange thing is that Bolivia is loaded with oil and gas, which have been partially nationalized. So really, it's following down the same path as Venezuela. Isn't it strange they've got untold petroleum reserves, and yet they're the poorest country in South America? You want to guess why? Now, it's true. Being an indigenous guy himself, he helped the indigenous people as president. But he, like the Castro brothers, and Ortega in Nicaragua, and Maduro in Venezuela, wants to be in power for life. He's a megalomaniac, or at least he's turned into one. Turns out he's a guy who doesn't have much use for the country's constitution that limits presidents to serving a maximum of 2 terms. Now, here's the thing. The guy's no dummy. He manufactured a kind of a catch-22. In 2009, while he was president, the Bolivian Congress, under his guidance, introduced a new constitution. And buried in the terms of the constitution was a way for Morales to produce his own catch-22. So how did he do it? Well, get this. The Constitution that limits a president from serving no more than 2 terms allowed Morales to argue in the court at the time that his first term should be exempt because it predated the new Constitution that he initiated. You get it? And Bolivia's Constitutional Court agreed, and Morales was allowed to run for a 3rd term in 2014. Pretty sneaky, huh? And now we're up against the 4th term in a couple of weeks. And get this. A Human Rights Watch organization has reported that almost 100 judges have been fired by Morales since 2017. When they don't play ball, they get fired. So when they talk about power corrupting and absolute power corrupting, absolutely, he's a great example. Because years ago, he used to be a guy that believed in democracy, voting, and the Constitution. But now, the only thing he's interested in is staying in power. And talk about allegations of corruption. All Latin American politics is corrupt, and so it is up in the States, too. Nothing new there. Now, Morales was involved in that billion-dollar Odebrecht construction kickback scandal coming out of Brazil. But there's another wilder and crazier scandal. Turns out, Gabriela Zapata, the 31-year-old ex-girlfriend of Evo Morales, is serving a 10-year prison term on corruption charges. Get this. Gabriela Zapata, a former manager at a Chinese engineering group, CAMC, was accused of using her influence with the president to win a $560 million government contract in Bolivia. And how about this? She began dating Evo Morales in 2005 when she was 18 years old and he, 57. Turns out, Zapata was found guilty of laundering illicit earnings. It was determined that vast amounts of money deposited in her accounts and cash payments were used to purchase real estate, cars, etc., etc. So then why didn't her boyfriend, Evo Morales, go down with her? Well, it's because they got in a huge battle and they broke it off after 2 years, but only after he fathered a love child with her. And somehow, again, surprise, surprise, the Bolivian court system failed to indict Morales, who at the time of the trial was estranged from her. Talk about fishy, huh? But just think of it. In the poorest country of all South America, the president's girlfriend or ex-girlfriend wins $560 million in government contracts. Now I ask you, did you ever hear that story publicized in the first world media? I'd say the chances you heard about that 2016 judicial case were about zero. By the way, why do they always say love child? Why not just a wild and crazy, cocaine and booze-fueled, out-of-their-friggin-minds party child? I'd say in most cases that would be the more accurate description. But I could be wrong. Oh, and by the way, about that love child or party child, whatever. Talk about a bizarre twist. You know, President Morales and his ex-girlfriend are in a bitter dispute over that child, a boy he insists is dead, while she still insists he's alive. Man, only in Latin America, huh? Well, unless Bill Clinton and Jeffrey Epstein are involved. Meanwhile, Evo Morales and his administration frequently criticize the country's privately owned media as a cartel of liars. And the president himself refers to media journalists as terrorists, stating for the record that the press was his number one enemy. Which is why in August of last year, he caused even more alarm by wanting to introduce a law against lies, which could see individuals fined and or jailed for spreading what he calls incorrect information, with of course him being the arbiter of what was or was not incorrect. On top of that, he's got all the environmentalists and activists all pissed off at him, especially since in recent months, there have been constant wildfires raging in Bolivia's Amazon regions. Turns out, they're blaming the president for the devastation, pointing to his support of a 2016 law that offered incentives to farmers to burn areas of the forest to make way for pasture land. So right now, when you hear all this talk up in the first world media about uncontrolled fires burning the so-called Amazonian lungs of the world, the fact is in Bolivia, there's a law that says you get paid if you burn down the Amazon. So did the first world media report on that? Nope, they just point to global warming and say the earth is heating up, so naturally things will catch fire all that more easily. Well, now you know, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. Meanwhile, Bolivia's longtime president Evo Morales has aligned himself with so-called leftist socialist leaders like Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba. So then, did I list enough reasons to dissuade you from a plan B in Bolivia? That is to say, nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Meanwhile comes this article, last week, October 6th, entitled, Big Pharma Lures Mexicans to Donate Plasma in the U.S. Huh? Starts out by saying, every week, thousands of Mexicans cross the border into the U.S. on temporary visas to sell their blood plasma to profit-making pharmaceutical companies that lure them with Facebook ads and colorful pamphlets and flyers, in Spanish, promising hefty cash rewards. It says the donors, including some who say payments are their only income, take home up to $400 a month if they donate twice a week and earn various incentives, including buddy bonuses for recruiting friends and family. Turns out selling plasma has been banned in Mexico since 1987, but in the U.S., donors are allowed to give plasma up to 104 times a year. Then it says the majority of plasma donors come from Mexico on temporary visas, which allow non-immigrants to visit their family or shop and to engage in commercial transactions which do not involve gainful employment in the U.S. And the plasma companies contend their payments are not wages as defined under the law. They classify them as compensation for donor time, since the process requires long waits and an hour or more hooked up to the plasma extraction equipment. Then it says one pharmaceutical company, Grifols, G-R-I-F-O-L-S, which is based in Barcelona, Spain, runs 17 plasma donation centers along the U.S.-Mexican border. But there are other companies, too. Then it says U.S. immigration agencies have done little to stop the stream of Mexicans using their B-1 and B-2 visas to visit these plasma centers. In an interview with ARD German TV, former plasma center employees say they routinely recommend their clients lie to U.S. Customs and Border Patrol about the purpose of their visits. Then it says there are 43 plasma donation centers located on the Mexican-U.S. border. While U.S. plasma donation centers within the U.S. receive about 1,000 paid donations a week, the ones on the Mexican border receive more than double that, more than 2,300 donations per center per week. Then it says, and who knew this? The payment you get depends on your body weight. If you weigh between 110 and 149 pounds, you receive $20 a donation, while donors between 175 and 400 pounds earn $40 a donation. Then it says, subterfuge is necessary because at best, crossing to the U.S. to donate plasma for money falls into a questionable area of the law. And as of yet, according to the German TV report, there haven't been any investigations or prosecutions of plasma labs by the U.S. government. So then what's the plasma used for? Blood and vaccines rank among the most valuable of U.S. exports. In 2018, the U.S. collected 41 million liters of plasma intended for the production of medicine, and almost half of that was shipped abroad. Around 78% of blood plasma is exported to Germany, Spain, and Austria, where Grifols, CSL, and other operators have high-tech plasma processing plants. A large portion of the drugs produced then are re-imported and sold back in the U.S. Then finally, it says, based on the German TV report, they estimate that nearly 10,000 Mexican citizens donated plasma at 5 Grifols centers that they monitored in just a 2-week period. And since a typical Mexican worker in Ciudad Juarez across the border makes around $9 a day, $20 from a plasma donation covers many basic needs like food, electricity, diapers, and clothes. Well, all I have to say is that's pretty pathetic. And yet another reason to hate Big Pharma. They're at it again. But at least the donors are Mexican citizens who have permission to cross the border legally, for what that's worth. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.